Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our subject is going red for women. That's a big theme this month. You're going to see lots of PSAs, announcements, special articles in magazines. We're going to take a slightly integrative approach to this issue with today's guest. She's Dr. Dana Cohen. She's a good colleague of mine. She is trained in internal medicine, and she practices here in New York, and she is someone who is very acquainted with many of the latest trends in complementary and alternative medicine. And in fact, we worked together not too many years ago, and she was a very, very gifted physician. I can attest to her clinical skills. So, Dana, we were talking in part one about the importance of vitamin K and the importance of the right kind of calcium for women. But when it comes to cardiovascular prevention, what are some of your other favorite supplements?
Magnesium. I think that we certainly don't talk enough about the importance of magnesium and the different forms of magnesium. I typically tend to use a form called glycinate in my practice. I also use magnesium taurate, which differs from magnesium citrate or oxide, which, as we all know, is what I typically say is what's in milk of magnesia. It's meant to be a cathartic. It's an irritant. So mm-hmm. It's meant to move your bowels.
So if you want to move your bowels, that's fine, you know, but if you want to really absorb your magnesium, you take other forms.
Exactly. So magnesium is another one. Fish oil. I am a big proponent of fish oil. You know, we talk about cholesterol. We don't talk enough about inflammation for cardiovascular prevention. We don't talk enough about blood sugar stuff. So that's a whole armamentarium of things, depending on what you're looking at and what you're measuring in patients. So if there's inflammation, that needs to be addressed.
And that would be measured via what?
I typically tend to do this Boston Heart testing. I'm not sure if you're familiar mm-hmm. With them. So they do this advanced cardiometabolic testing, and they look at inflammatory markers such as fibrinogen, hsCRP, but then they do some other advanced ones like LPPLA2, the plaque test that people talk about.
So they do myeloperoxidase, I think.
Myeloperoxidase, right, which are more specific to arteries, inflammation in your arteries.
Oxidative stress.
As opposed to, right, non-specific markers. So you look at those things. I think that to me is more important than an LDL level, mm-hmm. you know, which is your bad cholesterol. And then blood sugar, addressing blood sugar, insulin levels, is there insulin resistance? Are there signs and symptoms and addressing that? And so as far as that also to me is more important than a number of cholesterol, the number of your LDL or your total cholesterol.
Highly sensitive C-reactive protein is high, which is a marker of inflammation. What measures would you undertake to address that?
Well, I mean, first is if it's really high, there's obviously something going on. So you talk to your patient and try to figure out where it's coming from. Often we can't figure it out if it's just mildly elevated. Is it just coming from the person being overweight, from fat cells? Mm-hmm. Is it coming from joint inflammation? Is it coming from an infection somewhere? I can't tell you how many patients I could not figure out for years what their CRP of 19 was. And when they finally figured out that they had a tooth infection that was sitting there for years.
We've seen that too, yes.
They pulled it out and mm-hmm. it's gone. Yeah. I can't tell you. It's happened so many times.
Yep.
So I always say, go see your dentist mm-hmm. First.
So if someone has a CRP that's elevated, any supplements that specifically target inflammation?
Well, fish oil is the biggest and most well-known studied one. Works in the same pathways, you know, as anti-inflammatory medications. So fish oil, curcumin is a really good one, and I have people eat it. Put it in your food. You don't, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you don't need to take so many
dietary turmeric, like curry.
Yeah, exactly. Which it's also a bit of an acquired taste, but if you play around with it, there's some really nice recipes.
Which has hot peppers in it, which are beneficial, capsaicin, capsaicinoids that are anti-inflammatory, and even sometimes help with fat burning.
Yeah. Yeah. And if let's say they do have some arterial inflammatory markers elevated, I'm an aspirin proponent. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I don't know if we've ever had this discussion, but I do recommend baby aspirin in patients who are at high risk and have some, you know, high fibrinogen, high that LPPLA2. I would, and you know, there's some good research about cancer prevention with aspirin. So mm-hmm. I'm an aspirin proponent.
Colon cancer and possibly prostate. So, now we come to the very controversial subject of statin drugs, but particularly in women. I think it's a little better established that certain men, particularly middle-aged men with very high risk factors, derive some benefit from statins. So there's some questions as to individuals over 70 or 75, whether the statins are worth it, whether the downsides exceed the benefits. But then there's a big controversy about whether statins make a difference in women. And, of course, you can't generalize because there are some women at very high risk and some women who seem to be bulletproof. So do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of statins at all. You know, statins were originally studied on patients who have had an initial heart attack.
Right.
And then it just went insane.
Yeah, it was an extrapolation, you know, from like, if it's a little like, you know, same thing with a lot of drugs. You know, many of these ulcer drugs, you know, were developed for people with holes in their stomach, and now just everybody has a little heartburn takes them. Similarly, you know, some of these drugs for mental disorders were developed for people with very, very serious mental problems. Now, anybody who's got a mild social phobia takes them, you know. The
exactly.
shy librarian
really.
Is taking, you know, Zoloft or Paxil.
The reps did a really good job of repping out their prescriptions. And, so I'm not a fan of statin drugs. I will keep patients off of them at almost any cost. Mm-hmm. I'm more worried about the memory problems with statin drugs. My mother died of Alzheimer's, and she was on a statin drug, and I don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
There was also, just going back to the vitamin K, you know, we all know statin drugs deplete CoQ10. So there was also another recent study that statins inhibit the synthesis of vitamin K2. So, you know, it's that whole, there's another, what's the word I'm looking for, paradox that mm-hmm. if statins are decreasing vitamin K2, which we need to protect our arteries
right.
from calcification, you know, it's not helping with heart disease.
Exactly. That's the weird thing is the statins lower cholesterol. They may have sort of an anti-inflammatory effect, but then they get in the way of CoQ10, they get in the way of vitamin K. And they have now, according to some studies, particularly in women, increased the risk of diabetes by about 30%. So ain't good. And we know that diabetes is a clear-cut risk factor, major risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard to get this word out there and to fight against regular doctors. You know, it's not easy because they are prescribing them.
Here's what I do, and I know that you probably do this as well because we've worked together, is I will get many women coming in for a second opinion. They may have a cholesterol of 278, or even, I had a woman the other day, his cholesterol was like 370. And she was told, obviously, many times that she needed to go on a statin. But many of these women have three-digit HDLs. So they have a very high HDL, but they also have a high cholesterol. But you can't completely ignore a cholesterol that's over 300. So we've done the EBT heart scan, which actually looks at the interior of the arteries. And many of these women, we've established that they have a score of 0 or 4 or 7, a very low score, which suggests that they're not very prone to cardiovascular disease, possibly by dint of these other risk factors, which may be protective against heart disease, even though cholesterol is high. So to use that as a little, sometimes a way to differentiate which women to treat aggressively or not.
Yeah, I often will send people for that EBT score, which is it's also known as a calcium score.
Mm-hmm.
Looks at calcification via CAT scan. You know, that's interesting, I think, and it's typically not covered by insurance, but it costs, do you send them to Lenox Hill?
No, I actually, we're talking, Inside Baseball about New York City. Cost $100? Okay, I'll send them to Lenox Hill. I send them to a place where it costs about $200 and change. East Side Radiology or something like that. But it's an inexpensive test. It's just for some reason, for crazy reason, it's not covered by insurance, and it really is a very valuable test to help stratify, you know, who's at risk, who's not at risk, you know, should you worry, should you not worry too much.
And for, underutilized.
But for everyone, you know, regardless of whether they're on a statin, we urge them to optimize their cardiovascular risk factors through diet, through exercise. Let's talk a little bit about hormones, because after all, we're talking about cardiovascular disease in women. So what's the relationship between female hormones and cardiovascular disease? That's controversial because a lot of women, you know, after the Women's Health Initiative study that came out, I guess it was the late 90s or early 2000s, you know, women were fanning themselves and, you know, sweating through their night clothes after being told that the hormones could make their cardiovascular disease worse or give them a heart attack.
Right. Well, once again, you have to differentiate. I've said this so many times, and this is, and I still don't. It's so frustrating to me because the Women's Health Initiative was done on synthetic progestins or synthetic progesterone called progestins, or it was Prometrium at the time. Provera. Mm-hmm. Provera was the name of the drug, and it was done on synthetic estrogens, Premarin at the time. And the truth is, bioidentical estrogen and bioidentical progesterone are cardioprotective, period.
Right, and that may be why women are so protected against cardiovascular disease up until around the age of 50 or so, and they have a later trajectory towards cardiovascular disease because then they essentially become male-like because they're bereft of these protective female hormones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other part of that, of the Women's Health Initiative, was the issue was with heart disease was they had given women who had not been on any hormones for 10 years, women in their 60s, they've been in menopause for over 10, right, older women, and they started them on synthetic hormones. So there may still be something about a woman who has not been protected with estrogens and progesterone for many years and then all of a sudden start them on that may be an issue. I don't know. There's never been any study on that. But I think from menopause, early onset, giving hormones is cardioprotective, safe, and protective, decreasing the risk factor for heart disease.
Mm-hmm. So, and this is a therapy that you utilize with women in your practice because it'll help the bones, it'll help the heart, and it'll help well-being. How often do you find it necessary to utilize natural hormone replacement therapy?
Well, you know, I because of the Women's Health Initiative, I no longer feel that everybody at menopause should be on hormones. If it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some women are fine. They seem to be okay.
Yeah. But if somebody comes in and tells me they're not sleeping, they can't think straight, they have osteoporosis, you know, they're going to benefit from hormones.
And I know you know this, but there's a difference between taking a pill by mouth and applying a cream to the skin in terms of the clotability of the blood. So if you're worried about blood clots, then you can administer estrogen safely through the skin route, correct?
Correct. And also, once again, bioidentical estrogen is less thrombotic or less clot form.
Plus, they're going to be doing all these other nice things, you know, with diet and fish oil and possibly aged garlic extract with natural blood thinners that and curcumin, the things that actually have an anti-clotting effect.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I wished in your list that you would bring up Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract because they're one of our sponsors, but that might have been a little bit too much to hope for. I'm sure you're a fan of Kyolic, right?
I love Kyolic.
Good. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's on.
Good and, for blood pressure.
And we didn't rehearse that. We didn't rehearse that.
No.
Okay. So,
no,
okay.
And
so,
that's probably the only form I use of a good garlic supplement.
Okay, so, and now vitamin D. That's an interesting one in terms of heart disease, because, again, that's one of those ones where some studies say yay, some studies say nay. But what impact might vitamin D have on cardiovascular risk? I know it helps the bones.
It helps the bones, but there is also some information that there may be some anti-clotting effects as well, believe it or not. it's recognized as an independent risk factor for a independent predictor of an independent predictor of risk for heart attack and strokes, vitamin D mm-hmm.
okay.
itself.
When it's too low, there's a risk. But but that's correlation, not necessarily causation. I don't think that the intervention trials have been that clear, you know, given women the vitamin D, has it panned out in terms of protecting women?
Yeah, I still, I feel like I'm still a proponent of supplementing vitamin D.
It wouldn't daunt me from prescribing vitamin D. I'm just not sure that the research has been that clear cut on that. Same thing with the B vitamins. And there's this homocysteine connection, which has been controversial because according to many conventional physicians, I hear from patients, my doctor doesn't want to check me for homocysteine because my doctor says they did a study and it shows that homocysteine is not important. B vitamins don't work, so he doesn't even want to test me. Would you please, Dr. Hoffman, test me for homocysteine? And so what's your take on on homocysteine? Is it still important, do you think?
Well, I do. I think homocysteine was shown to be an independent risk factor for heart disease, correct?
Yes.
And I think the missing link there is about a quarter of our population has this gene that we can't methylate folic acid. And if you have this gene and you're taking folic acid, regular folic acid, to lower your homocysteine, you could be doing things a little bit worse because it's not methylating. So that's not been proven, but I think that's a little bit of a working hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So I do check people if they have this MTHFR gene
right.
and give them a methylated form.
Have you checked yourself, by the way?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have it?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't? Because I'm heterozygous. I have, one out of two hits,
wow.
So I'm sort of, which is fairly common in persons of Eastern European ancestry. I think it's a 40% shot from people of Eastern European ancestry. So, so I get a little extra folic acid, but it's not, I don't think that's the double hit, which is a little more consequential. But anyway, yeah. So
what are
you're
your thoughts on the homocysteine? Are you giving?
Yeah, well, my thoughts are these. I think I'm very familiar with the trial, the study where they gave some B vitamins to patients who had high homocysteine. And they lowered their homocysteine, but they found these were patients with pre-existing heart disease. But they didn't find it made a difference over a period of, I think, a couple of years. I think there's some faults with that study. I think it might be that it could prevent heart disease, so it would have been harder to do a study on normal individuals because very few would have to be more expensive, larger study to see the very few individuals gradually developing heart disease and comparing the treatment group to the placebo group. It might have been that they didn't give it for prevention, because once you have heart disease, maybe it's difficult to reverse it just with B vitamins. That's number one. Number two, let's say it doesn't help prevent heart disease, the B vitamins. I think it does, but let's say it doesn't. I think it assumes another importance, as you know, in terms of cardiovascular prevention and prevention of dementia and prevention of cerebrovascular disease, stroke. I think that'll be borne out. I think, unfortunately, that one big study sort of deep-sixed a lot of homocysteine research, unfortunately, because, after that, not spectacular result, I think a lot of the research funds dried up for it.
Yeah. You just reminded me of something, too, that the idea of using niacin to lower that LPPLA2.
Yeah.
So that's the inflammatory marker that's specific to cardiovascular disease. Niacin does a very good job of lowering that.
Which is tough to lower.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that can certainly work. And I've seen it work.
Are you a big believer in niacin for lowering cholesterol? Because some people say, hey, something? If you challenge the whole cholesterol hypothesis, if you think that cholesterol is not that important and you don't believe in statins, why lower cholesterol with anything else, like red yeast rice, for example? Are you a fan of red yeast rice as an alternative to statins? I mean, if you don't believe in statins, red yeast rice is mechanistically is similar. Why is it better? Because it's a natural product.
I don't think it is. I don't. I think red yeast rice has very similar side effects to the statin profile, mm-hmm. and it's not as well studied. So I don't use a lot. I do use a lot of niacin, though. And it depends. Once again, I do use a calcium score on these patients, too. So if their calcium score, if they have high cholesterol and their calcium score is zero and they have nothing going on in their arteries and they have low inflammation markers, I go easy on them. I'm not going to prescribe them 10 things to lower their blood pressure, I mean their cholesterol. Mm-hmm. But let's say they have some significant family history and there are other risk factors that they have, then I'm going to work on lowering cholesterol as a way of lowering a risk factor. And I do use niacin as one of them. It's not sometimes not easy for patients to take because of the flushing, and you have to monitor liver function tests, that kind of thing. But it's good. It's a great way of
absolutely lower cholesterol. Yeah. It really will lower.
Yeah.
Some people advocate the use of either aspirin or I've heard quercetin can take the edge off the flush. Have you had any clinical experience with that?
Aspirin, certainly. I haven't thought about curcumin or seen that, but that's
a quercetin. Quercetin. With a Q.
I haven't. Which is a bioflavonoid. I haven't. But I use a timed release niacin, which is important to distinguish. Time release is not the same as no flush niacin.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally just time release, so you don't get as much flushing as regular niacin. It just sort of holds it back a little bit, and it's definitely worked better. But people think that equates to no flush niacin and no flush niacin to work on your cholesterol.
Do you have any tips for arrhythmias, because they're pretty common in women? Do you work with patients who have palpitations or atrial fibrillation? Mm-hmm. That's a frequent question I get on my radio program.
Yeah, I don't treat a lot of AFib. I'll send them to the cardiologist. Palpitations, I have a lot of ideas about, and more often than not, it can be a thyroid.
Yep.
People always think high thyroid, but it can be a sluggish thyroid.
Yes, we've seen that.
So it's important to look at that.
Because when the heart slows down too much, we get bradycardia with a low thyroid, then you'll skip a beat because the sinoatrial node wants to catch up, so you'll jump ahead. And then when you get a little help from thyroid medication, which is notorious for making arrhythmias worse, if you give the right dose, the sweet spot, then you'll get relief. Yeah.
Exactly. That's definitely palpitations. I'll look at the thyroid. I can't tell you how many people, I'm just going to say this right now, I give your article that you probably wrote maybe 15 years ago on mitral valve prolapse.
Oh, yeah, right. That's a classic. Yeah.
Great. It's such a great article about people think I'm crazy, and they're not. And it's about blood sugar, and it's looking at magnesium and all those important things. So mitral valve prolapse can be a cause of just some palpitations or even anxiety.
Like a dysautonomia, like an autonomic nervous system meltdown kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a great article. I give it out all the time to my patients.
And stress seems to be a huge factor for women. The women these days are really squeezed because they're obliged to hold down jobs while taking care of kids and then simultaneously parents, and they really take on too much responsibility. Do you find that your female patients in New York are uber stressed?
Oh, completely. And I have to say, I give them at least 10 different tools, whether it's transcendental meditation. I have a prescription that I give to patients. I have, or some form of meditation. I talk about talk therapy. I talk about exercise. I mean, we have to discuss these things. And I will always leave that open should they need something more to help deal with the stress, cognitive behavioral therapy, whatever it may be. Those conversations need to be open and discussed. And it is a huge, huge risk factor. Stress kills people. And it's no longer alternative medicine or holistic medicine to discuss, to know that,
Absolutely. That's very mainstream, I think. It's not emphasized enough in the hurried exchange that patients have with their doctors these days. Okay, well, that pretty well covers this important field. And I think that, in Going Red for Women, we've got to pay attention to, some of the traditional warnings, but we should also explore integrative approaches such as you've laid out. For preventing cardiovascular disease, while at the same time optimizing your health, increasing your longevity, reducing your chance of losing bone and developing fractures, Seems like all roads lead to Rome when it comes to using certain of these supplements. So thank you very much for sharing. And once again, share with us information about your practice. You have a practice here in New York. You're accepting patients. It's not just a women's practice, but probably you see a high percentage of women.
Yeah, I do see a high percentage of women, but both men and women, adults. I'm on right by Columbus Circle. My website is www.drdanacohen.com.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and all the best to you, Dana.
And thank you, Ron.
We'll see you. We'll see you soon on the integrated medicine circuit, I'm sure, as we attend conferences together and meetings. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.